right, thank you, and everybody, welcome. Welcome to this session. My name is Martin McFly. No, I'm joking. I'm Giorgio Sardo. Work in Microsoft Corporation back in Redmond. I'm a technical evangelist, and I work with Internet Explorer, with the web, with standards, in general, like anything that is on the web. Today, I want to talk about Internet Explorer. And I will talk about Internet Explorer 9, but also something about web standards. I will drive you through what Microsoft's position is with regards to the web standards. I will talk about performance, because I think that performance is very important for some of you. And I will also talk about something else. So this is the agenda for today. I will take any of your questions at the end of this session, but I will start with one question for you. So how many of you are developers? Good, everyone. How many of you are not developers? One, two, three. Okay, good. This session is mainly developer focused, so I think this is a good audience. Okay, let's start with I6. This is, let's be quiet here. This is a sad moment. Can I have the audio, please? I want to say it's time to say goodbye to Internet Explorer 6. We had I6 for a long time. And, you know, we released I6 in 2001. At the time, Wikipedia didn't exist yet on the web. So you can imagine the kind of web context that we had when we released that browser. And in the meantime, we had I7, we had I8, and now also I9. And you might have heard about this funeral of I6, this event where that has been held around the world, where somebody, it's funny, but they celebrated the death of I6. And the I team obviously didn't participate to the event, and you can understand why. I mean, this is our own child. But we sent a bunch of flowers, and basically this is like the message that we included in these flowers. So how many of you are still on I6? Please, be honest. Okay, a few students. Please, those people, can you leave the room? You really don't deserve to be here. Or at least, please listen very careful about what we've done in the last 9 years, because there is much more after I6, and it's time to move away from it. And go, without further ado, I want to start with IE8. And this is a very, very quick introduction about IE8 and web standards. I will spend most of the time of this session on I9. So let's go back to Visual Studio. I guess that all of you are familiar with Visual Studio, right? Yeah, right. Awesome tool, fantastic tool. I'm a technical guy, but obviously you understand as Visual Studio is great. I have here like a few projects, a few pages that show specific features of Internet Explorer 8 that showcase the HTML5 features that we include in Internet Explorer 8. And many people think that IE8 doesn't support HTML5. This is actually not very true. So let's start, for example, from the storage. How many of you are using the cookies? I guess a lot of you are using cookies to persist some data on the web. Well, today, the HTML5 specification gives you another alternative, which is local storage. You can see here, for example, that I have this variable, local storage. This is not my variable. This is part of the browser, and the browser automatically understands this. And what the local storage is, you can think about it as a local, as an hash table, where you can have several values, and each value has a key. And so you have like the set item that get a key, given a key and a value, is stored this value in this hash table. And you have the get item that does the opposite. It retrieves the value. Why is the local storage better than the cookie? Well, A, with the cookie, you have a limitation of 1 megabyte. The local storage doesn't have a size limitation. B is much faster, because when in the cookie, you need to extract only one information. You see the browser, what does in the background is still reading and parsing, scanning the whole cookie, and then it reads only one line of code. In this case, instead, because this is an hash table, you can address one specific line. It's much, much faster. Obviously, you have like also clear operation to clear the store when you want. And you have two types of storage. The local storage is what persists over multiple sessions. And then you have the session storage. So if you're familiar with the ASP.NET session, it's very similar. I'm browsing the site now. Everything remains in the cache. When I leave the site and I go somewhere else, the session got cleared. And everything here is on the client, is secure by design, etc. So the demo of this code obviously is fairly straightforward. I have a text box. I save this in my local storage. I load the value and I can get back the value. I clear the storage and I don't get anything back. The local storage is implemented today in most of the browsers. And you will see today how I will try to compare IE with the other browsers. Google, Chrome, Mozilla, Firefox, Opera, etc. Because this is not about IE. Obviously, I'm working for Microsoft. This is not clear. I have a preference for IE, as I'm sure that you do, right? Right?
Yeah.
I'm sure you do. But there are other browsers. As a developer, what I'm interested into is for you to be able to write some code that works across all the browsers. And so this feature is available today in most of the browsers. Something else that we included in IE8 was the network events. So if you look at the body here, I have two events, on online and on offline. And these events basically are triggered when the network connectivity goes down. Why are those useful? Well, let's say, for example, that you have a website where the user needs to profile. And you start putting like the username, the password, the date of birth, a secret question, and then another question, and then when it leaves, and then the seat, and then the cap. And then you click submit, and the network connectivity goes down. What happens in that case? The user hit refresh, and the page loads again all the text box, but with no content inside. And the user needs to write everything again. Well, using the local storage and using those events, when the user clicks submit, you can check, is the network still on? If it's not, you can save everything locally. And then when the user come back online, and you will have an event for this, you can restore all the values from the storage. How many of you are doing this today? I see no hands. How many of you would like to do this? And this is possible. This is possible in IE8, as most of the browsers as well. The only exception as of today is Google Chrome that doesn't have yet support for this function, for these events on online and offline, but they support like the polling methodically, polling like manually, this window.navigator.online method. Another interesting feature that we had introduced in IE8 was JSON. So you are familiar with JSON, I guess, right? How many of you are using JSON? Quite a few. So JSON is like a representation of your data. And you can have like a DOM object, a JavaScript object, and you can serialize this into a string and use JSON to do this serialization and deserialization. Previously, if you use JSON, I guess that you use like external libraries. For example, you go to json.org and you get the library from there, or use jQuery, use Prototype, use other libraries that does the work for you. We've seen this pattern from developers using these libraries to serialize JSON. And we thought, well, why don't we just include it in the browser? Because, you know, the JSON specification is part of the ECMAScript script specification, which is the JavaScript specification. And so this is a standard. Why don't we just include this standard in the browser? And this is what we've done. In fact, this time I have a JSON object. Again, notice that I don't have any library in this page, but I have a JSON object with a method stringify and parse. And I can do this operation automatically for you. Now, why is this important? Why is it important that Microsoft includes JSON natively support in the browser versus using an external library? Well, A, because we are the best developer in the world. And because we are the best developers in the world, marketing pitch, we can optimize this code. You are using external libraries in JavaScript. We are using C++, obviously. And you can understand how, by design, C++ will be faster than JavaScript. And so in this demo, let me show you very, very quickly the code. It's very straightforward. I'm looping through an iteration like 10,000 times. And I'm using first this JSON2 library, which is like the external JavaScript library that you're probably using today. And then later I'm doing exactly the same operation using the native JSON object. When I run this in the browser, look at the difference in terms of performance. What do you think? Useful? Yeah, it is useful. If you're using JSON application, this guy will improve much more your performance. JSON support is JSON is supported by most of the browsers today. It wasn't supported by Firefox 3.6, I think, or 3.5, and it's been included as support in the latest Opera version. I think we've been the first with this one. Something else that we introduced within i8 are the selectors. And selectors allow you to select. So a selector, for you, for those of you that don't know what it is, this inner B, this definition here, this is a selector. Basically say selects all the elements in this page that match this selector and then apply the rule that I'm defined lower. And so with this function, document.querySelectorAll, from the JavaScript, you can query the page and get all the elements that satisfy that selector. And for example, in this demo, you can see how I'm getting the elements and then I'm changing the color of some to white and some other elements to blue. And below I have like a lot of div elements with either one of those two class names. If I run this in the browser, guess what is going to appear? And again, you can see how easy is this operation. While previously you maybe had to iterate and make some if statement, etc. And again, because the selectors are a part of the browser, the performance difference between using the native selectors versus like just like the normal iteration is still like saving 50% in performance. We had partial support for selectors in i8, and I will come shortly to i9 saying what we done new in i9. The last demo that I want to show you here is about compatibility. I guess that many of you have the problem of running like a web design, a website, and then testing this website in i6, i7, and in i8. And Firefox and Chrome and Opera and Safari, I don't know what browser you're targeting, but definitely there is the challenge. So one of our team, in particular the Expression team, thought, why don't we help developers in building a tool that helps them to do this testing for them? And so this is called Expression Web 3 Super Preview. Have you already seen this before? Only a few. Perfect. So we released this tool at the end of the last year, the version 1 of this tool. And as you can see here, you can start probably guessing where I'm going. On the left, on your left, you see Internet Explorer 8. On the right, you have the other browsers. So let's say, for example, that I navigate to my website that I'm developing locally. And I want this to test this website in i8 as well as the other browsers. So not right now you see what i8 would render. On the right, I can say, well, I want to test this in i6. I want to test this in i7. I want to test this in Firefox. And I hit refresh. And this tool automatically is connecting to all the rendering engines of those browsers and is doing for me the operation of rendering the website. And you can see the side by side. So on your left, i8, on your right, Firefox. Do they look the same? Yeah, I think they do. They're very, very similar. And this is good, right? Because if your code with standards in mind, the browser should render the same way your website. Let's go to i7. Do they look the same? Yeah, they're very similar. If you notice, when I switch from Firefox to 7, there is a little difference in the font of in the font of the title, but nothing major. Now, what do you think about i6? Do they look the same? Not exactly, right? Well, where is this guy? Well, this is one of the few bugs in i6, where basically it's called double margin bugs, where the content just shifts to the next column. And you can see how this tool also gives you the exact, I explain you why it doesn't look the same. And the reason, you see, the left property of i6 calculate the left property as 200, i8 does it as 829. And that's the real problem. And that's how the tool helps you to identify potential issues. You can do even more. Actually, you can also like overlap the two engines, and then you can zoom in and you can see, for example, let's go here. You can see like how the text, for example, overlap if you want to be like pixel by pixel perfect website. You can eventually, if you have a designer in the house, you can also import like images, like the internal mockups from the designers. And you can see how your implementation as developers match the implementation from the designer. And I'll bet you will see some surprise. Well, I'm a developer, so I often do something completely different from what the designer asked me to do. But that's another story. So this tool is just like a quick overview of our investment to help you, to support you building cross-browser websites. In the next version of this tool, you will see an evolution. You will see the tool reaching, extending the support for other browsers, engine, and it will have other nice features. How many of you now believe that they will try this tool? Everyone. By the way, I forgot to say, this is free. So you can go and download it for free. Is it good news? I don't see anybody clapping here. Great. Thank you. All right, now let's switch the gear and let's start talking about Internet Explorer 9. And on Internet Explorer 9, I want to talk about two different things. The first one is web standards. So everything between IE9 and web standards. The second part is about performance. Performance is very important. We've done a lot of work to optimize the performance. And my last demo of this presentation is actually the one that I prefer mostly. And it will show you what I mean with real performance. On the web standards, how many of you know what the W3C is? Let me try to understand. Don't be shy if you don't. Okay, quite a few. Actually, you might be surprised. Like, I've been in 5-6 countries in the last 4 days, and most of these countries, basically, most of the people ignore what W3C is. This is like a consortium. It's an organization made up by many groups, and includes any works on all the specification or the recommendation for specification of many web standards. And as Microsoft, we've been involved for years, if many of those. HTML is one. HTML5 is one that you hear a lot these days. But it's also SVG, it's also DOM, CSS3. And then there are also task forces. And I will talk about the task force shortly. But this is like a group of organizations like us, Mozilla, and others that work on creating test cases. Because one thing is writing the specification. And then the other thing is implementing the specification correctly. And how can you define that correctly? Building a test case. And this is why we have task forces. In particular, on the HTML working group, this is something where we've been present since the beginning, I think. And Chris Wilson was one of the guys that started Internet Explorer in Microsoft. He's been the co-chair of the HTML working group in the W3C for many years. Only recently, a few months ago, Paul Catton took over Chris Wilson and is now co-chairing the working group. What does co-chair mean? The chairmen and the co-chairs are actually responsible for making sure that the specification is built like in a good way and people participate in and provide feedbacks and people is free to agree and disagree with the specification. So they don't actually take decision over the specification. They just monitor the whole process. Sam Ruby is another of the co-chairs. Like, there are several co-chairs. And then there are like organizations like Microsoft, there is Mozilla, there is Opera, there is Adobe, there are many Nokia and many other organizations, as well as just individual participants. Me, you. Is any of you working in the W3C? Well, not in this case, but any developer can be part of W3C. In fact, let me tell you one thing. If you go to the W3C website, and you obviously subscribe yourself and you provide a feedback, any feedback. Could be, oh, I love this spec, or oh, this spec doesn't work. I want to do blah. I need this. Your name is going to appear at the bottom of the specification. So when then the developers go and see the specification at the bottom, if you go there, like they're listing all the names of the contributors. So like it might be one reason to go there and have a look to the W3C specification. You might be famous. And there are a lot of threads, a lot of conversations going on at any time. It's very difficult to follow the progress of the specification. And this is one of the reasons that HTML5 specification is not ready yet. And it will not be ready because there are still a lot of open conversation going on. And then when somebody finds something that is wrong, basically the way it works, like, let's say that you find something in a specification that you believe is not correct. So you submit a bug. And then the committee of the specification basically review the bugs. And if they think that the bug are true, they make sense, basically the bug becomes an issue. And the issue, in order to be solved, need to find like the approval from all the members of, or most of the members of the group. Until there are open issues, the specification will still be a recommendation, a working draft, meaning it's not the final one. It's just like something, a work in progress. When all the issues are cleared, then's when the specification go to last call. And after the last call, it become a candidate recommendation. Right now, we are still in the first phase because there are still many very, very tough issues where we and many and the other browsers vendors and other implementers are working and discussing to resolve. With IE9 platform preview build number one, which I will refer later as IE9, we are committing to the following: HTML5, XHTML, SVG, DOM, and CSS3. By the way, this is what we shipped last week at Mix. In Las Vegas, we announced it for the first time, the Internet Explorer 9, and we released to developers the first platform preview that you can go and download and test on your machines. Let me understand. Have you already tried? Just a few of those. Perfect. I will show you today what the platform preview looks like. I will show you some demo. Everything that you see today is available on the web, or it will be available on my blog, so you can test it and you can just like double check, and you can go even further in detail into this content. I want to start with the markup languages. So there are basically three markup languages, big one. HTML, which is the one that you already know. And now we are talking about HTML5. HTML5 is like an evolution of the HTML spec as you know it. And basically, it solves some of the problems that browser vendors had in the past. In particular, in the past, there's been always one big issue about errors. For example, let's say that you make up your own tag, not the div, not the span. You make up the tag beer, right? And you have the beer tag on your page. What should the browser do in that case? What do you think? It's right. I don't know. And basically, the specification previously didn't say what the user agent had to do. And so some browsers said, well, I don't know this tag, and so I'm not going to render anything. Other browsers said, well, I don't know this tag, but just in case, I'm going to render something, not a beer, but something. Maybe I'm just displaying beer. And so the HTML5 spec clarify many of those open questions and clarify what the browser and the user agent should do in case they find some error or some other condition. And so all of these are already included in the IE9 platform preview build 1, as well as SVG. So SVG is another markup language. If you're familiar with Silverlight and with the XAML is kind of an evolution of the SVG. And they're very, very similar. And basically allows you to build graphic on the browser. Like you have your HTML page, and you can write your graphic there. You can add rectangle, circle, polyline, path, etc. The particular thing about IE9 is that SVG, and previously, obviously, if you wanted to run SVG in the past, probably you used the Adobe SVG plugin or some other add-on. Now, instead, we are able to render an SVG native. We have native support for SVG. Another thing that we have in IE9 that is not yet on the other browsers, but I think it will be, is the ability to use SVG inside HTML. So in the other browsers today, if you want to use SVG, you can either create your own standalone file, extension.svg, and then open that as a standalone, or you can embed it inside an XHTML page, which is a different story. And with IE9 instead, we allow you to create SVG fragment snippets inside the HTML. And this will definitely help you building SVG application. XHTML, I'm pretty sure you heard of this before, is like a more rigid definition of the HTML and comes from the XML syntax. There are good scenarios where it makes sense to use it. Sam Ruby is one of the guys that's been working on, is one of the co-chair and maybe also chairman of this working group. He's been working on this for a long time. And Altov is one of the creators. I often say, guys, XHTML is very complex. So unless you really need it, well, just use HTML. But we received the feedbacks in the last years that developers needed XHTML for specific scenarios. And so IE9 includes native support for XHTML and the MIME type application XHTML, XML. SVG is the third one that I mentioned. And this is like allow you to build graphic. And I will show you some demo for each of those shortly. Another concept that I want to target here is interoperability. It's a long term, difficult term. This is a marketing term, interoperability. I will give you my definition of interoperability. Interoperability is writing code once and the browser rendering your code in the same exact way across browsers, across devices, across everything. I know this is dream. This is tough, but this is lastly what we're working on. And so with previous version of IE, we always take care, work a lot on the interoperability. With IE9, we're going even one step further. And so we're not just testing our browser with the standards and with the specification that it should look like. We're not just doing the test cases, but we are also looking at other implementation of other browsers and trying to find what you developers are using, what other browsers are implementing, and make sure that those are aligned. And when there is this alignment, we need to do something. Either us or the other browsers or the specification itself need to be more clear. And to show you what I'm talking about, I have a quick demo. And for this demo, I'm going to open the platform preview. This is the platform preview of IE9. Do you think something is missing? We forgot to use to add the navigation bar, the back button, the refresh. You don't have anything. It's not that we forgot. This is by design. This is not a beta. This is not a release candidate. It's a platform preview. So it includes the rendering engine, the new one, the new JavaScript engine, which I will show you shortly, and allows you to start debugging the new features of HTML5 inside IE9. So let me go to this demo, border radius. This page that you see here, this is the default page that you have when you install the platform preview. By the way, you can install this side by side with IE8. So you don't need to switch completely to this browser. You can still keep using IE8. The border radius show a very nice feature that is part of the CSS3 specification. Maybe you're using borders with a radius today. And the way you probably do it is using, I guess, images or using some quirks or some ACK. But no, there are several ideas over the web. And so the CSS working group said, why don't we define a property in the CSS that allows you to do a corner radius? And you can see this property here, border radius. Here it is. And so in this demo, I'm animating the title. I'm making it like a cycle border style. And then I'm animating the border radius. And you can see, like, I'm animating with a different angle each single corner. Pretty cool, no? Easy to see. And you might think, well, this is cool. Do you think this is cool? Yeah. Please be more, don't worry. Don't be shy. If you don't like something, say that you don't like it. If you like it, well, do whatever you want. Do a standing ovation. We are in a cinema. Now, I love this. I absolutely love it. One line of code and it allows me to do something that maybe takes 20 lines of code today, many images and tools, and it's complex. But then let's try to run this in other browsers. And by the way, the other browsers implemented the corner radius before us. They came with this before us. So let me try this in, which one do you want me to try? Chrome. Oops. Let's go to Chrome. Same demo, same code, no tricks. The code is public. So I animate the border. I cycle the border. I animate the border radius. Ooh, do they look the same? Let me put them side by side. Is it the same? No. So which one is true? Is correct implementation? Which one is wrong implementation? Well, a smart developer will say, let's try with another browser and see what it does. Let's use Firefox. So Firefox, same demo. Animate border radius, cycle, animate. Does it look the same as Chrome? No. Does it look the same as IE? No. Okay, Opera. Let's try Opera. Opera must have done like at least one of those three implementations, right? Animate, cycle. Oh, sorry, still loading. Animate, cycle, animate. Is it the same? Nope. Same of IE? Nope. So you can see and you can try with Safari as well, it's the same result. Like one demo, one line of code, which seems to be easy, right? Seems to be very straightforward, and five different results. Now, which one is wrong and which one is right? And this is interoperability. This is a challenge today. And saying I implemented the corner radius as a browser is not enough. We need to implement it in an interoperable way. Because lastly, I don't think you can rely on something like this until all the browsers render the same image. And so how can we solve this? How can we get over these kind of issues? And this is why Microsoft is working a lot on the Tasking Force to create that testing case. Because the only way to test this is create a test case that shows, okay, I'm using this property from the specification, and this is the result that I think the user should see. And then once I create this test case, the other browsers can look at the test case and can say, yeah, I think this is a good result, and so I'm going to test my browser with test. Or I'm going to say, no, I think that, I don't know, the Mozilla implementation is right versus the IE one. Now, in this case, which implementation do you think is right? Well, I don't know. I work in Microsoft. I cannot say IE9. But this is just one case. I'm not saying that we are perfect. I'm not saying that the other browsers are wrong. This is a challenge that everyone has, us included. I'm sure that there are many other samples where other browsers are doing maybe right thing and we are not. But this is what we're working on. This is important to realize that there is this problem today, as always, and interoperability is very, very important. And before claiming full support for HTML5, et cetera, we need to solve those kind of issues. In fact, we built last year 7,201 test cases for CSS 2.1 specification. Now, if you write test case, you know what I mean with 7,200 test cases. And we gave all of those test cases like to the W3C. We just donated them. And now are in the phase of approval. And we expect to do the same with the other part of the HTML5 specification. We think this is a good approach to say, yes, this is a browser, a standard compliant browsers, or no, actually there are other cases. In fact, on the CSS 2.1, did you know that IE8 has a full CSS 2.1 support according to those test cases? That, by the way, tests all the specification bottom down, and the other browsers don't? They have very good implementation of the CSS 2.1, but it's partial. It's about 80-85%. And then HTML5 is a very, very large specification. My manager asked me to spend a week to read the specification. And I said, why should I spend 1 week, 1 day, a few hours should be enough? And actually, 1 week wasn't just enough. It's a very, very long document. If you print it, it's like 4 or 5 Bibles. It's very large. But one of the most discussed tags is definitely the HTML5 video. Why? Because this is cool. I want this. And we, Microsoft, want this. As a matter of fact, we are going to implement HTML5, and we are also committed to build HTML5 video. This is something that you will not see in your platform preview build that you can download today, but this is something that will come in the coming platform previews. Now, you might think, what the hell is he doing now? I have in my hand a flip camera. This is like a very cheap object. You can buy it everywhere. It's very good. It's very handy. It allows me to record a video and then, basically just save this video to the computer. So I'm recording a video in real time, no tricks. And this guy is encoding the video with H.264. Why? Well, you need a codec, right? The video tag itself is beautiful. You don't need to use a plugin. You don't need to use an add-on, either Silverlight or something else. I'm not going to say that word today. But then you need a codec to encode the video. And the codec could be, there are several codecs. Which one is the right codec to use? And this has been one of the big points of the conversation. Initially, in fact, the HTML5 specification said which codec to use, but not everybody agreed. And in fact, now it doesn't include a specific codec. And so I think that one of the interoperability challenge with this tag is making sure that all the browsers implement the same codec. Because if each browser uses a different codec, well, no way that you developers are going to use the video tag. It doesn't make sense. YouTube, how can YouTube re-encode all the videos to several codecs? That's, well, if they do, well, chapeau, but it's very expensive, very, very expensive, and it requires bandwidth, requires servers. Today, the de facto standard is H.264, which is what YouTube has, which is what Facebook supports, which is what, like, even those hardware cameras support. And you have, like, native hardware acceleration support in many devices for H.264. Just for your information, there are, like, other browsers today that are using other codecs. Maybe you heard about Fiora, OGG. That's another one. The nice thing, I agree with those browsers, it's open, or at least they claim it's open today. The bad thing, well, is not broadly adopted yet. There are other codecs coming. For example, Onchu was a company now acquired by Google that is working on a different codec. I honestly think that for the time being, H.264 is the right decision to do. We will see in the future as this evolves. And what you can do is just like you've seen, I plugged my camera. I have a secret application here that is just copying the video to my local drive. I'm running a special daily build. This is like daily build that includes the support for the video. And then I'm going to open one page. I should have the link here. And I want to show you the result of the video that I just recorded. Voila.
In the coming platform previews.
And so this is me, and this is the now, video. Wow, this is terrible. What the hell is guys, you didn't now. Smile.
I have in my hand a flip camera. This is like a...
I'll switch the audio off. And this is like what I just recorded. This is not... This camera I have here, it doesn't support HD, but you can already have full screen HD high quality videos supported by the video element in i9. Let's have a look to the source code of this page. Here it is. Easy, huh? One line of code, the video codec, the video tag, the source, and that's enough for the browser to connect to the video and do everything. Do you think this is interesting? What do you think as developers? That's great. Thanks. Don't be shy. Don't be shy. Come on. You're shy. Guys, you should have looked the guys where was it? Oh, in Netherlands yesterday. They were coming to the stage. They were like taking my, I have like to drag them on my legs. Like, thanks. This is beautiful. I want to see somebody doing the same here, please. And as for the video, we also support the audio tag. The audio allows you to do the same, like include audio inside your page. And the codec that we currently support are MP3, container, and AAC encoder. The other big feature that we introduced in i9 is SVG, as I told you. And SVG allows you to create like graphic. So you can see here, for example, in this sample, just like a rectangle, and then you have properties like the background or the position X, Y. It's integrated. It's part of the HTML. So it's not like a standalone thing living on its own. It's part of the DOM. And so you can interact with JavaScript inside. As you interact with the HTML, you can also interact with the SVG from the JavaScript. I want to show you a couple of demos for the SVG that is, to help you understand what I'm referring to here. So let me open test drive. I have a few samples here. I will start with this one. You might recognize him. Do you remember him? So this might look like a picture, but is all built in SVG. In fact, if I open the developer tools, you're familiar with those. We introduced them in i8, and we're going to improve them even more in i9. In fact, I'm not going to show it today, but there is also a network inspector that allows you to debug the network traffic and see the timing and see the headers, et cetera, et cetera. Kind of very similar to Fiddler. I'm sure you know Fiddler. So what you can do with the developer tools, as you could do for the HTML, is inspect the code and, for example, take one element. I'm taking the i, and you can change dynamically the properties. So, for example, let's change the fill from blue to red. Oop. And now I have a red clip. And then the rest of the code you can see is all built on SVG. So it's path, polylines, and colors, et cetera, et cetera. Another demo that I want to show you for the SVG is a popular game from the 80s, 70s. Do you remember this? And so this is a game that has been built by one of the engineers in the IE team. And he thought, yeah, this is funny. So he built the game, and then he started playing and playing and playing. And then, well, okay, I'm not a good player, so I keep crashing. But for this reason, he built, just for me, the protection. And so I can smash into the object, and I'm just safe always and whatever happens. Now, this wasn't enough because his boss said, well, dude, you're spending all of your time just playing at work. This is not good. And so he said, okay, let's enter in the Microsoft optic and let's do something Microsoft optimized for Microsoft. And he built a different mode, the Clippy Shield mode. But then what does Clippy does? Did he do his job? No, it told you what to do. So when you fire, would you like to lower the shield or write a letter or something else? And then obviously, you can play and you can have fun with this. If this wasn't enough, you can go to Nebula mode and you have just something big happening on the screen. Now, what's interesting about this demo is that it's completely built in SVG. No add-ons, no plugins, no tricks. This is SVG and JavaScript. That's it. So you can start thinking about the scenarios. Today, if you want to draw something simple as a triangle on the web, it's difficult. It's very difficult. SVG basically gives you any graphic capability inside your applications. Another scenario, this is not as funny as the Clippy one, is maps or in general charts. So I have a chart here, for example, and say that the user needs to zoom. If this was a normal image, when you zoom into the page, it looks like granular. You lose the context. With SVG, and I'm using the mouse wheel here, you can zoom. This is vectorial graphic, so you can zoom in, zoom out as much as you want. Like for the people at the bottom, you can still see exactly how the browser rendered the font. So with SVG, we started in the platform preview 1 to implement some of the features. SVG is made by modules, as you can see here. And so the first column gives you the modules that are already available today. The column on the right tells you what we are committing to build with i9. We want to be very transparent with you. We heard this feedback a lot. We heard the feedback. We often keep things for ourselves that we are not public, etc. So this is what we are committing to build. And on the bottom, you can see what we are not committing to build. So we are not going to have, for example, SVG fonts. And then I receive a question. Does it mean that you're not going to support text? No, absolutely. We are going to use the CSS3 fonts. It's a new feature. But SVG fonts, well, it's very an overlap. And even Doug Shepard is the SVG work coach, sorry, SVG chairman. When I talked with him last time, he said, well, honestly, this is nice because there is a clear overlap and we don't need to create confusion for the developers. Another featured standard that we are supporting in IE9 is CSS3. So I told you about the work that we've done with CSS 2.1. The 3 is the next specification, it's the next step. And includes several modules, again, it's very modular specification. And we have support for the color module. For example, you can use opacity, alpha colors inside your application. You can animate the transparency and the opacity of your elements, any HTML element, which is something that today is kind of tricky. We support backgrounds, so multiple backgrounds. We're working on the border, as you've seen earlier. We're working on the border specification that include also the radius, the corner radius. We also support all the other selectors that are available today in the CSS3 specification. And selectors, basically, for example, if you have a table, there are many selectors that allow you to take the first row or maybe only one row, like each other row, and then you can give a different color, alternative color, etc. And really like speed the performance, improve the performance when you start querying the your page. The other thing that we are supporting, and I think this is a very nice feature, is the CSS3 namespaces, which basically allow you to define many CSS rules and include them inside the same namespace. And so when then you move that part, like that component from one website to the other, you don't need to think about renaming the controller, etc. This is like its own entity. And so you can move that entity to another website. And because everything lives inside the same namespace, it will keep working. And you will not have like conflicts of names or similar. Let me show you a couple of CSS3 demos. For example, let's use the alpha and opacity. I have an object here, and what I'm doing is a fading out operation. And the JavaScript in the background is just moving the opacity property of this object. So maybe today you're using jQuery or other libraries to do this. Now is native. And by the way, jQuery and all those prototype UI, all these libraries in the background, they basically use the same features that I'm showing you today. Something else to show you, like the selectors in action, is this one. So, or actually, yeah, you can see, for example, here that I have a table and I can remove, for example, a row. And you can see how dynamically the styling of this change automatically. And I'm not like working with the JavaScript to recolor the rows. Everything is like styled by the CSS. Or I can, for example, select all the elements that are input box and are enabled. Or I can select all the elements that have no sibling. Or I can create my own selector. For example, here, one of the many CSS selectors is selection. So if I enable this one, I can then start like selecting content. So this is just like the basic selector. Another demo that I want to show you is the t-shirt designer. And this is like a blend, a mix of all of many standards that I mentioned so far. So on the left, you see like my actual demo. On the right, you see the DOM representation of this. And so what you can start doing here, for example, is choosing a color for your t-shirt. And then you can have a color for painting. And so now you can, for example, use the browser. Well, I'm using the mouse here, but you can use the browser to paint on the screen. How am I painting? Guess how? SVG, obviously it's SVG. In fact, if I go behind, you will see that I'm creating dynamically many polyline, SVG polyline, that just are the group of all the points that I'm using, I'm drawing on the screen. All right, this was an overview of the web standards. The last component is the DOM. And the DOM is basically the translation of your HTML into the language that the browser uses and understands. And the DOM as well is a modular specification. We had support for DOM, obviously, specification in the past, and now we're extending the support to many other modules. For example, you might recognize here the DOM events. If you're using events today on the browser, you know that when you are on IE, you need to use the on attach, for example, the load event on the page. When you are on another browser, you use the add event handler or add handler. And so we've been working a lot in the DOM events level 3 specification. And now we are in a point where all the browsers starting from IE9 will support exactly the same type of events. And there is a demo on the side that shows you exactly how the events work and how the propagation work. And this should help you to write the code once and again. Same JavaScript running the same way across browsers. We talk about web standards. And now that we are clear on the fact on the huge commitment that Microsoft is spending with the web standards, I want to show you what we know with the performance. And this is the part where I'm mostly excited. And the reason is that you can have any great web standard, any great language, but if it is slow, it's not useful. And today, to be honest, this gives you the power of creating any scenario. You've seen with the SVG, you could have, for example, a paint application running on the browser. But then it needs to be fast in order to be compelling for the end user. And so with IE9, we've done a huge work on the performance. And you will see, I will talk about hardware acceleration a lot, but this is everything on IE9 is hardware accelerated. Before I start getting into the detail of the work that we've done, I want to show you how we think about the performance. So let's go in a slow motion view of like how a browser render a website. And let's take the scenario where I start from Bing and I want to navigate to the Wall Street Journal. So I click on the link, Wall Street Journal. And the first thing that the browser does is setting the background color, right? This is very easy. It takes the CSS and it put the color on the background. And then it starts parsing the page and it starts from the top. And it starts putting some of the content on the top. And then it builds the header. And then after the header, basically, in the meantime, it downloaded all the images, all the content, and it showed some of the content inside the page. But the layout is not done yet. So the layout comes short later, and you can see how it starts creating the right column. And then it pulls all the media elements inside the website. And then in the meantime, maybe there is some JSON, and this is, for example, data that is retrieved on the client using JSON or in general Ajax. And lastly, obviously, the slowest operation is often loading the ad on the page. So there are several steps involved. This is a quick chart. This is a like exercise for you. You can see here like 5 popular news websites. The sites show you mostly the same content, but each site is different. So the size is different, or the number of HTML elements is different, number of CSS elements is different. Now, question for you. Which one is fastest? Which one is the best in terms of performance? 3? Other numbers? Great. Correct. Good choice. The 3 is the fastest. Why? Because the size is very small, probably. Which one is the slowest? 4? 1? I heard a 2, maybe. It's the 4th. Why? I don't know. Because, yeah, the size is big, but it's not big as the first one. There are a lot of elements, but not as many as the first one. There is a lot of JavaScript, but not as much as the first one. So why is it slowest? Well, because performance is complex. It's not only JavaScript, it's not only rendering, but it's how you developers build your website. There isn't a unique way to say which one is faster and which one is slowest. In fact, if we take the Wall Street Journal website and we look at work that the CPU is doing on the machine when you render this website, we can see how there are many components involved. Like the CPU will spend some time on the JavaScript, obviously. But look at the first chart. JavaScript is like 10-15% of the overall time. And then it spends some time on the layout, on the rendering, a lot of time on the rendering of the graphic. And then there is the parsing, there is the marshalling. There are many, many, many elements. Once we all understand that the performance is multidimensional, it's important for a browser to optimize all of these, not just the JavaScript, but all of those. And so this is what we've done. For example, this is like an internal chart of the Wall Street Journal. The colors match the previous slide, and the x-axis is the time. So this is what was happening in IE8, and this is what's happening in IE9. We are able to render the site more quickly because the CPU is spending a different time. And also notice that the average CPU usage is much lower. Before I get into the performance demo, I want also to start talking about the JavaScript performance in particular, because a lot of people say JavaScript is slow on IE. And you know what? Could be true for some websites. Could be not true for others. And it's important to optimize the JavaScript, but it's even more important to understand what we need to optimize. And so we run the top 7,000 websites, and we learned that most of these websites use exactly the same method, the same JavaScript code. In fact, like the index of is the most used function. And then like the get element by this is very popular, as well as like the add event listener or the get computer style. Those are very, very recurrent functions. And so when we start building the new JavaScript engine, naming code Chakra, we optimize also this function. in addition to any other JavaScript function. In fact, if we run the SunSpider benchmark, you're aware of, you know the SunSpider benchmark, right? Do you? No? Okay, the SunSpider benchmark is a JavaScript test that basically tests only the performance of JavaScript. It's not exact, it's not perfect, but it's a good one, and it's one that has been used by many browsers for a long time now. It's been built by the WebKit team from Apple, and it's open, like you can test it on any browser. And this is actually the performance of the JavaScript in many browsers according to that benchmark. So I'm not what you're thinking. Oh, IE8 is slow. Are you? So if I draw I6 in this chart, do we have a second floor here? Third floor? It will go up, 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 up. In fact, IE8 compared to I7 was already like a very, very... had a very, very performance, great, big in performance improvement. Compared to the other browsers, yeah, you see this gap here. But please notice that on the y-axis, that are milliseconds, meaning that the gap between us and Opera 10.5 is this one. Close your eyes. Oh, close your eyes. Open your eyes. Okay. Now do it again very quickly, like normally. Okay, that's the gap. And if you run this test, it takes about 70 seconds. And after 70 seconds, that's the gap between us and Opera or Chrome or the others. And as you can see from this chart, we are already slightly faster than Firefox 3.7 Alpha 2 pre-release, like the current nightly build of Firefox. What does this chart mean to me? Well, A, we are all fast. All of the browsers in the market now have a very fast JavaScript engine. B, we arrive to a point where even if we can definitely optimize, we are just at the platform preview build 1. You can imagine what we will do with the 3 or the 4, or I don't know which number, with the RTW. But the gap that we are reducing now is very, very close. And there is obviously like a technical speed limit. We cannot go for, much faster than that. And so now that all the engines have a fast JavaScript engine, all the browsers have a fast JavaScript engine, what are the other areas where we need to optimize? As I show you, it's not just JavaScript. JavaScript is a small portion. Even on a website like Gmail or a website that is Hotmail, this is like JavaScript intensive. JavaScript arrives to 25% of the overall load. And the graphic is very important. The rendering is very important. And this is why IE9 is the first browser to use hardware acceleration. And in particular, it will use your GPU. You use hardware acceleration actually also for the JavaScript. In fact, let me tell you the background. It might be interesting to know. How many of you have like a multi-core machine? Everyone. The average from the Windows, Windows Performance Index, the one that you have on Windows Vista 7, told us that on an average, most of the users have 2.3 core on their machine. So the JavaScript, the new JavaScript engine is working on 2 cores or 3 cores or how many cores you have on your machine. Meaning, for example, that one core is meant to do the execution and the other one in the foreground background is compiling the JavaScript, and they work in parallel. Same for the GPU. You might think that the GPU is like this big thing on a game machine with like water going around and the blue light. Yeah, it was like that. But now most of the laptops today have a GPU. Even the netbooks include GPUs. And we are using the GPU. And so we are working from the browser to optimize what needs to go to the GPU is sent to the GPU. What needs to be pre-compiled goes to the background thread in the other core. And so this is very hardware acceleration. This is called hardware acceleration. And every single web standard that you see earlier, HTML5 video, HTML5 SVG, or HTML5 in general, like any animation, all of these are hardware accelerated. And this will give you a great experience when you start using those heavily. Try today, for example, with one of the other browsers to get like an HD full quality video, go full screen, and you will see that the browser, like it missed frames or it freezes or it crashes because you need power to render this in the browser. And this is what we already have in the platform preview 1. In fact, if you try your website, I'll bet that they will be much faster because we are hardware accelerated. Now, this is good to say, like, this sounds like a marketing pitch when I say, oh yeah, we are hardware accelerated, we are the best. And I'm not here to make marketing pitch. So I want to show you a demo. And this is actually my favorite demo. It's called Flying Images. So I'm on i9 platform preview. I open this demo. And as you can see, I have images that follows my mouse, right, up and down. And then if I move left, they rotate in 3D. And they give me this idea, this perception of rotating in 3D. And I can increase the number, and they still follow my mouse, and they're very fast, right? And they can go, if I press shift, they will go even faster. Now, what is this? It's a cool demo, but what is this? It's HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Let me show you. I go to the JavaScript file. Or it's not even that. It's just like one page. What I'm doing initially is creating those images dynamically. You can see here that I'm iterating a few times, and I'm creating the images. And then shortly after, I have a draw function. And notice at the bottom, as I have a set timeout on the draw, and basically I'm looping through the same function several times. And then I'm doing some math, obviously, on the cause and scene of the position. And then I'm just changing the left and top property. This is like the main part of the demo, where I just change the left and the top. I rescale them, and then this gives you the idea of the 3D object. So in case you haven't seen them, look how fast they are, right? What do you think? Nice, no? Now, let's run this demo in another browser. Somebody, just a few, told me that Chrome is fast. Do you think so? I don't know. Let's see how Chrome performs. Same demo, same code. This is not IE code. This is HTML, CSS, following web standards. This code is available. You can test it. Let's go to Chrome. Well, why doesn't it follow my mouse? And if I go left, why? Oh yeah, it's rotating, right? They are rotating. And if I press shift, well, yeah, they are fast. They can do 1-2 frames per second. So this is what I call hardware accelerated HTML5. And this is what we've done in i9. What do you think? Oh, thanks. Thank you. You can test, by the way, this with the other browsers. For sake of time, I'm not doing it, but you can test it on Firefox, and you will see that as you increase the number of elements, you see the same situation. If you go to Opera, they actually, I think, have a bug in the rendering pipeline, so they will start blinking the screen. It's okay. I mean, we are approaching HTML5, and as we approach HTML5, we need to be fast. And so this is why everything in i9 will be hardware accelerating. And this is the performance that you're going to get by default. You don't need to have special code. By default, you will get this performance on any website. Let me show you the internals of this demo. So we have a very, Jason Weber is one of the engineering team guys working on the performance. He did some analysis of the performance of this demo, working in IE8 and working in i9. And this is what happens in IE8. So you can see that in alpha second, basically we do one cycle, one iteration, which means taking the code, the first part is like, the first color is parsing the JavaScript. The second big color is like sending the JavaScript to screen, and the yellow is kind of like rendering, the rendering part. Now, how do you think this looks in i9? You might think it's shorter, but could you imagine that it's like this? And the reason, again, we have like multiple cores for the JavaScript, GPU accelerated hardware, so we can send precompiled code to the GPU, and then the GPU handles everything. And so what before in the upper part is like 2 frames per second, later become 60 frames per second, which, by the way, is kind of the limit of the screen. So even if the engine was faster, most of the current screen, they cannot go for more than 60 frames per second. And so the video tag and any other elements will have the same performance in i9. So to conclude the presentation, I talk about web standards and I show you how much we care about web standards. I talk about performance as an enabler of scenarios built on top of web standards. Now it's up to you to create those scenarios. I think we have the capabilities. Everything I show here today is available. If you go to the IE test drive, you can download the platform preview 1. We are going to release incremental releases. So every 8 weeks, we're going to have another platform preview. And then when we find a place where we are okay with the product, we will release the beta, then release candidate, and then the RTW. And we're going to follow kind of the same release cycle of Windows 7. In the meantime, if you have any bug or any request, you can go to connect.microsoft.com, or you can use the platform preview. There is a button, report. Where'd you go? Report issue, and you can report automatically the issue that maybe you're seeing on your site using the platform preview. All the demos that I show you today, or most of them, are here or will be here in the following days. As I said, the video element is coming with following platform previews. So with that in mind, feel free to go to my blog. I always post other interesting demos. I'd like to thank you for your time, and I really want to let you some time for questions. So thank you very much. Yes. Yes. Okay, I'll address the two questions. So the question are, what about the SE3? And the second question is, what about the canvas? And I will tell you what the canvas is. So let's start from the SE3. First of all, do you know what the SE3 is? Really, what it is? Somebody want to tell me what this SE3 test is? Any volunteer? Yes? So the answer has been, should be an indication of how web browser support the standards. And I think my comment is, yes, it should be, but it's not. I will tell you, I'm a technical guy, I'm not a marketing guy. The SE3 test, I will explain you what the SE3 test is. It's a set of 100 test cases. And those test cases test boundary conditions across the CSS specification, the SVG specification, the HTML 4 and 5 specification, and the DOM specification. In the past, people like Mike Shever, is the vice president of engineering in Mozilla, they've written publicly, SE3 is a marketing tool. It's not really useful for developers, because the thing that it goes to test are actually not the same feature that you're using on your site. They are those kind of like boundary conditions. I show you the border radius because I believe this is something useful for you. While the SE3 might test, I don't know, like something that you might never see in your life. I didn't know about most of the things that are tested by the SE3. Or it tests features that are useful, but still, like, it's an interesting test. Don't get me wrong. It's a very interesting test. And because it tests boundary condition, is an excellent test. But I think that defining that test as the indication of this web standard support, that's probably too far. And when we think about standard support, for example, the SE3 test doesn't tell you how the border radius should look like. It doesn't. That said, definitely it's a test that is important, because it's, as any other test, is testing something. And with IE8, our support was very low. With IE9, as we show at PDC, we arrived to 22, so on 100. The current preview arrives to 55. So you can see how our score on the SE3 test is definitely increasing, and it will keep increasing. That said, when we think as Microsoft about test cases, we like the approach of building, maybe spending more time, more resources to build a proper test suite and working with the W3C on this test suite versus going to something like this. I was talking with Doug Shepard, and Doug, again, is the chairman of the SVG. So he's the guy that made the SVG also. Or at least like he's been very involved. Like SVG is one of his child. And I was talking with him about the SE3 test, and he told me, please, Microsoft, don't care about the SE3 test. Why? Well, because actually it has six things in the SVG. Out of those 100 test cases, only six are on the SVG. And out of those six, developers don't really need those things. So instead of focusing on the six boundary condition, why don't we start working on the SVG task force with IIM and Mozilla and Opera and Google, or building something that is real, that is much more important. It's bigger, it will take more time, but it allows you to be, like, it gives much more credibility. The second question was, what about the canvas? So the canvas is another element that is part of the HTML5 specification and allows you to do, if you're familiar with logo, like the turtle going left, right, and drawing something. I studied it at school. I think that's been my first language. It does the same. It's like a canvas where you can draw anything. It's part of the HTML5 specification. It's not included in the platform preview one. Today, I show you a lot of features. I think I show you our huge efforts with regards to the web standard space, with validating the web standard, with regards to the performance. The platform preview one is just the first step. It's just the first announcement that we're making. You should expect more coming in the future. Okay, any other question? Yes. So the question is if the AZ3 is not an indication of what of a browser supporting a web standard, what it is an indication? And actually, I don't think that there is only one indication. There are many test cases. There is the AZ3. There are many other tests that check particular features on the web. I think that because the specification is built and it works and lives inside the W3C organization, all the test cases that are built by the task force in the W3C, those will be the first, the big component of validation. In fact, we are working with Mozilla on this idea of creating like a super map, a super chart of many, many, many web standards, where basically you run this automatic test and you can see how this is validated by several browsers. As Microsoft, like, we are providing like additional and incremental test cases. And we have a test center, for example. And you can see how those test cases are scores across other browsers. This is just like one possible indicator. This is not perfect, right? You can see out of the, I think, are 100, 200, I don't remember how many test cases that we ship this time. You can see what is the support in IE as well as the other browsers. But this is not complete. So we will need to work together with other browser vendors and other implementers in general to make sure that they validate. Lastly, I don't think that you need to care about 80, 90, 100%. I will be happy once you said, well, for the first time, I built my site once and I didn't have to test it and change it and make this quirk and make this condition and make this if. When that will happen, then we will have reached our goal. So that I will say is my personal test case. Any other? Yes. Sorry, what about variables in CSS? Are you talking about expressions? I'm not sure I understand the question. CSS three variables. I'm not aware of this. So are you talking about a mix of CSS or? One single, I can take this offline. Maybe if you're referring to the CSS expressions, which is like a way to that you had in the past to include code inside the CSS that, or maybe you're referring to the conditional comments for the CSS. Let's take this offline. I want to make sure I understand it before answering. Anybody else? I don't see. Nope. All right. So thank you again for your time. I'm here if you have any other question, and thanks again.